Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Reality radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
Hello. I'd like to welcome you to the Monday podcast of Talking Real Money, which is the Saturday radio show that we do on Northwest News Radio in the Seattle area. Now, they've moved into a new studio, so we've had some technical challenges that are no fault of ours. We have no power over them. We are merely an innocent bystander in this whole train wreck. So I'm recording this on Monday because part of the recording from the station was missing. And you'll notice that the show's a little disjointed this hour because we were having difficulties with the phone lines in Seattle and other things. There were an echo things going on. I'm not going to get into it. It's just we're hoping that they work all the little bugs out of their new studio and their new systems and their new engineers and all the things that they're doing that are new. And I apologize for the effect this has on the podcast, but there's still good information to be had, so we're going to provide you with that through the rest of it. And we only missed a little bit of the beginning, I think, where I was talking about something about how when I talk, it's stream of consciousness radio. And the topic is March Money Madness of this program, March Money Madness. So we're going to join the Talking Real Money radio show on Saturday, the Monday podcast, kind of, sort of, already in progress.
85, stream of consciousness. Whereas Tom is the note-taken guy. He is so prepped. He is prepped.
I am. And for this show?
You got to be.
March Money Madness?
Well, he's so proud of the title of today's show.
No, that was your, I give you full credit for that.
I thought you did it.
Oh, nope. I said March Money Madness something. You said money. Yeah.
March Money Madness.
Well. Yeah, works well.
Well, it's alliterative. I want to give you a phone number before we start alliterating about March Money Madness, though, and that is 855-935-TALK. 855-935-8255. The forwarding works now because the phone lines are functional, I believe. I think everything's working properly. So you can give us a call and talk about things that are important in your financial life. Because we very quickly change topics if you want to get some help with something. We go your way on Talking Real Money. But today, we are going to talk about March Money Madness. We are a little over 2 weeks into March, and while there isn't much of the basketball money madness or madness yet, March Madness, there is a lot of financial madness. It pretty much started with a bank.
Yeah, and by the way, just back to the madness part, my bracket is already broken. My bank is not. So there is some good news for me out of all this.
Your bank? Okay, you bank at Bank of America. That's where all the money's
exactly.
going.
Exactly.
I mean, literally. Okay, if you were
greatest
pulling out.
Thing that ever
you,
happened.
You're pulling out of First Republic or PacWest or any of these. Where are you taking your money if you're taking your money out? More than likely.
Let's see. Chase, uh-huh. Bank of America, Chase, Bank of America.
Chase, Bank of America. Yeah. I mean, really, where are you going to go? And this is, by the way, I want to just say something political, little political.
Oh, please.
This is the bank's own fault for asking to be deregulated. We don't want to be subject to the stress test. We don't want minimum liquid capital requirements. This is their fault because they got greedy. This is why we need, at least in this world, a little bit of regulation. If the government is going to back something up, then we really need them looking to make sure they're not taking advantage of the situation. Because if you know you can't fail, then who cares what the risk is? You're going to take as much risk as you can possibly take if you know you're just going to get bailed out at the end. So there needs to be, must be, even the Wall Street Journal that hates regulation alluded to this today. They said, yeah, come on, a little regulation, not necessarily a bad thing.
But let's just give a little bit of the backdrop of the story and then talk about what it means to me, to you.
It's all about you, huh?
Yeah, when it comes to the money part, yeah, pretty much. Right. Yeah, like everybody else.
It's true.
Because, I mean, it's been a very strange week, which we'll get into here in just a couple. I mean, it's been a lot of weirdness that we need to kind of unpack.
And I know you're all still a little confused about all this. So we're going to try and help this make sense and tell you what you should be doing if you've got a multi-million dollar account.
Tom and Don are talking real money. Your guides to a really great financial future. Tom and Don are talking real money.
Hey there, hi there, hold there, welcome back to the show there. I'm Don, Tom's over there. We're talking about March Money Madness, and the most mad thing that's happened has been the failure of one bank and many others that appear to be teetering.
What is it, two now? Is it Signature?
Oh,
two,
that's right. Signature, it was Signature and Silicon Valley. Yeah, no. The two. But yeah. They were both kind of edgy banks, but... Go ahead with your little story about what happened there, Tommy.
Well, I mean, okay, but I don't want to go that far back. I mean, this week has been, I think, even weirder with all these people swooping in to help First Republic Bank with $30 billion to make sure that they weren't going to go under. Then Janet Yellen comes into Congress and says, the U.S. banking system, in her words, remains in good health. Saying that bank regulators' depositor rescue plan had stemmed fallout from the panic. She also reassured lawmakers that no money came from taxpayers to bail out banks, which is, I guess, kind of true. But anyway, so but beyond all that, there's been a lot of other subtext to all this that I think people have been worried about. For example, once you go past bank deposits, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, really, there's no reason to have more than $250,000 in a single bank account,
mm-hmm.
save for companies that are borrowing money or loans, that kind of thing. Okay, that's a different situation. So that should be off the chart, the table, pardon me.
And can I just address that elephant, though?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know that if you have a loan, they can require you, they say, as a term of the loan, you got to keep money in here.
Got to hold there.
Well, but then, if that's the case, you as a company need to realize that your money is at risk. You can't just trust that it's going to be safe. You need to have a contingency plan should you not be able to get at that money. And that I think a lot of companies were very lazy about that, laissez-faire about that.
And the contingency plan was a week ago Thursday when they pulled out $42 billion with a B from Silicon Valley Bank. That was the contingency plan. But this sort of contagion, if you will, moved into things like money market funds, because people have been moving money from regular money market funds to federal money market funds at places like Charles Schwab. Should they be doing that?
Yeah,
that's
a question on the
table.
That's a really interesting question. The money market industry, remember, money market funds are regulated and they have to have very short-term paper in them. But there are some differences between a regular money market and a federal money market. A regular money market can have money in corporate, short-term corporate paper, short-term corporate bonds, commercial paper, that kind of thing. Whereas the government, the federal money markets must keep everything in federally backed short-term securities. Now, remember, even in the depths of the 08 crisis, there was only one money market, and it was a very aggressive one that came in below. It's called breaking the buck, and it's when you drop below $1. So they dropped to 99 cents. So the risk of you dropping below a dollar on any of the money market funds today, at least those from the major companies, Schwab, Vanguard, Fidelity, those guys, very low, very low.
And then on top of that, though, then the trading this week was very weird with government treasuries. They were way down there, way up at the end of the week. I looked up the number. Intermediate term government bonds made almost 3% this week, which is more than they made in the last like 2.5 years.
Well, there's an explanation for that, too. No, there's an explanation.
Okay.
The explanation is investors in those securities, people who are buying them, were buying them last week, expect that the Federal Reserve will now, because of the dangers to the economy, the danger of a recession, or, you know, something horrible happening to the economy, are greater than they were 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so the Fed will change its tune on raising rates, and rates may actually decline a little bit. And that brings a boost to the prices.
That is the question on the table now, right? What
right.
will the Fed do next week? Will they continue, as they've said, either with a quarter point or half point boost? Or will you, as you say, you know, we're going to just sit on this one for a month to kind of see how things shake out, right? So a lot of people are sort of playing that. They're playing the bank thing. They're playing on. So what do we do as investors
right.
with all of this
that
new information? That's
question.
What people want to know.
Yes. Tell them now. Tell them.
I'm ready to tell them. You ready?
I'm ready. Tom is going to tell you what you should tell. I'm sorry.
I just did. Did you hear it?
Yeah, I did. I heard it. You know what he told
I
you
said
to do?
Nothing. I said nothing.
Well, he actually said nothing. He literally said nothing.
Yeah, there you go.
He didn't say the word nothing.
Doesn't
he literally
well on the
said
radio, but,
nothing.
Yeah. Nothing.
So really,
there's no way,
you should
there's
just
no
do
reason
nothing?
To play this. There's no reason to really there's no reason to do anything.
Now, what
I
the,
mean,
what if, what if,
come
what
on.
If I have $2 million in a bank? What should I do then?
I would be moving a bunch of that money to other banks.
Yeah. It just
or as you pointed out, that's a good candidate for somebody in a money market type of situation.
For example, the Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund. That is, it just holds U.S. government-backed securities. That's all it holds.
Of what length?
Very short maturities. Days, weeks, like, a few months.
Yeah. Obligations have to be repaid.
Well diversified,
quickly.
A lot of liquidity. And by the way, if Vanguard was the first company to break the buck, it would destroy their credibility. It would destroy their credit. No company the size of Vanguard or Fidelity can even think about damaging their credibility. If it was getting close to breaking the buck, I guarantee you Vanguard would backstop it themselves.
Phil, how to put the money in there and make sure that
temporarily until those longer term, you know, the 1 month treasuries matured. So, you know, the odds of this happening are very, very low. Of course, could anything happen? Yeah, we could get hit by an asteroid. We could have a fungus. Oh, I watched just the beginning of The Last of Us.
Let's not do that. Oh, God, please.
I only watched the first 30 minutes,
so
and
gross.
Debbie goes, somebody said, I can take that. I can do it. I can handle it. She said, I talked to a lot of my friends. They said, she watched 30 minutes, and she goes, I cannot watch this show.
It's
But
hard.
Anyway, we could have a fungus.
Days, the Last of Us, Last of Us.
But no, anything could happen. But if you expect
by the way,
the world
can I make an aside here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
aside,
go ahead.
Aside away.
Well, I was just going to say, don't make out with the fungus people, but go ahead.
See, I'm not there yet. So he loves, I got to tell you, Tom loves to spoil shows. He is like, he's chomping. He does this all the time. He goes, so have you seen this episode? I said, no. He goes, well, I want to tell you, but I can't. Yeah.
Click.
You
yeah,
want to
sorry.
Tell me he wants to
You
tell
were saying,
me.
Go ahead. I interrupted you.
I don't remember.
You lost your train of thought.
It wasn't
so
important.
So out of all of this,
just
and by the way,
do nothing.
As you know, Don and I read the financial press a lot.
A lot.
A lot of publications,
we
newspapers,
hate doing it, but we
and
do it for you.
I know. And guess what 99.5% of the articles are about this week? This.
Oh my gosh. We were looking around for good topics.
Unbelievable.
And both of us were looking going, every single article written by every single media organization, and by the way, spoken about, including ours, is the bank thing. Because I think it just came out of left field. I think this is one of the things we talk about when it comes to investing. Everything works until the unexpected happens. And it's always those unexpected events that throw the market into turmoil. And you have to just live with those unexpected things because by their very nature, unexpected things can't be expected or factored in.
Tom and Don are talking real money. For your real life and real future, Tom and Don are talking real money.
Well, this just in from the Talking Real Money newsroom downstairs, which is my wife watching
research staff.
My wife watching CNBC or
diligently.
Something.
Yes, of course.
I'm hearing it.
Hearing us coming back.
I am hearing us coming back from somewhere. It's not my studio.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
No, it's you.
It's not. I'm serious. Nothing else here. It's not me. All right. I don't know where we're coming back from. Wow, that's weird. Hold on, let me talk into my mic.
The crack studio
team is working. No, there's not a speaker on in my studio. Not a thing. Anyway, a East Texas bank, this just in. No, I think he did it actually earlier, but Debbie just sent it to me. Brad Tidwell. You know Brad.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Brad is the CEO of Vera Bank. In the in Texas, he sent an email to all of his customers along with his personal cell phone, reassuring them that all was well with the bank. And he says that people are keeping.
I'm sensing an unhappy ending here.
No, they're keeping their money there and thanking him for calling and letting them know and being. This is actually a great example for a lot of businesses. If you get out in front of it. And you communicate with people.
That's by the way, banks truly are a confidence game because the minute people quit believing in them, they go out of business. They go get their money.
I think this is coming back from the radio station. I think there's a mic open in the studio.
There's all kinds of echo. So, yeah.
I think there's a mic open in the studio.
This is heading to a bad ending with Mr. Tidwell.
It's a good ending.
He just said, I'll tell people.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. Here's what's going on. And a lot of banks should probably be doing that right now. And a lot of customers, though. The point was, if you've got more than a quarter of a million in your account, you need to get it out. But we have a question actually related to this that came in last week. So here you go.
Hi. Today we had the report of the bank in California, Silicon Valley Bank, that has been acquired by the FDIC because of its financial situation. And the statistic that caught my eye was that $150 billion of their deposits are not covered by FDIC insurance, apparently because the balance of the accounts in question exceed the FDIC limit of $250,000. Does the FDIC insurance apply to both personal accounts and business accounts up to $250,000, or just personal accounts? And what happens to that $150 billion? Is it just blown away and the people who were above the limit are in a world of hurt from having lost so much? I'm sure you'll probably talk about these things on Saturday's program this week.
And I look forward
to your thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know, Tom. It's okay. Yeah, what? The echo is now gone. So it was at your end, guys. Trust me. Because it's gone. Is it gone now, Tom?
Yes.
Yeah. So did you touch anything?
I don't know how to touch anything.
I don't know how to touch anything. So I don't know. Yeah. All right. We'll be back. 855-935-TALK if that works.
Tom and Don are talking real money. Reality radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
We're back. Hi, Don here. Tom there. Talking real money. Through it all. And we're going to answer the question from the caller because it was a great question. Are only personal accounts insured for $250,000 at the FDIC by the FDIC? Or are business accounts insured for $250,000 per account? The answer?
Are you asking?
No, you can answer.
Oh, I believe the question, I believe it's any account.
Right.
250 or under.
So here's what you can do. I mean, if you've got a bunch of money, you want to go to the same bank, you put a quarter of a million in your name. If you have a small business, you put a quarter of a million in your business's name. If you have a spouse, you put a quarter of a million in your spouse's name.
You can do how long this that
works.
Last.
This works.
How long would that last, though? How long till she pulls it all out of there and is headed south?
Oh, God.
I mean, I thought you.
I know where you're going now with this one. And then you could do a joint one.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. There's that's
what's
like
that? That's a million.
That's $1 million. Whoa. Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. Okay. All right.
So you see, there are ways around this.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
and then you go to the next bank, you do the same thing if you have millions, and you just keep on going.
Right. So $2 million, two banks. And here's the other thing about this. Okay. I'm part of a homeowners association. It's a very big homeowners association with very big assets, and we pay a lot in and we waste a lot of money, but we have a management company that apparently has a relationship with a bank. And the bank, last week, they were going to...
Sounds weird on the face of it. I don't know. I don't know about that.
Last week, they had planned to put $2 million into a bank by the name of Western Pacific Bank, which is owned by Pacific Western Bank Corp. And it turns out they're one of the banks that's on the list of banks with some shaky stuff there in the portfolio. So, you know, my argument, if I was on the board, which I've been on, spent many years on this stupid board, and I wish I was on it right now because I'd tell them where to shove their stupid idea.
Where to park it?
Where to park it.
Okay.
It's not... Okay. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it's hard to go out and spread $2 million among multiple banks. You actually had to drive to multiple banks. Today
it took about 10 minutes.
Yeah, today to put $2 million into multiple banks, eight banks. That's all you need, eight banks, would take me 15 minutes max.
And look how quick they could take $42 billion out of one bank.
Exactly.
Basically, one afternoon. I mean, they transferred out. Okay, but you didn't finish answering the question, because the rest of the question was, what happened to the other $150 billion went out.
Yeah,
well, where'd that money go?
Well, at the time he asked the question, the possibility was good that some of it would be gone. Some of it. But the fact is that the bank has, it's now under the FDIC's control. They have those bonds that they bought with their depositors' money. They still own those.
Yeah.
It's just that a portion of those bonds that were of longer duration went down in value because interest rates rose.
To sell them.
Right.
To sell them to get cash.
When
you have to sell something that's 20% off, guess what? That creates a problem. And if you have to do it over and over and over again, that creates a big problem.
But the reality was that the government's bailout, as we're calling it, isn't really it's not $150 billion bailout. It's going to be little or nothing because there's so many assets that the bank has. They own all of these bonds. They have value. If you just hold them for a few more months or a couple of years, they mature at face value. So that loss would go away if you're just patient. That's why we preach patience with portfolios. There are a lot of P's. Good thing I wasn't right on the mic.
Good thing there's no echo on that. That would have been bad. All right. Can I ask you another financially related question?
That's what I'm here for.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah.
This comes
my
from
job.
David.
David.
In Portland, Oregon. Yeah.
Okay.
He writes, I have a 401k administered with Vanguard. One of the investment options is the Vanguard Retirement Savings Trust 3. This fund attempts to maintain a stable $1 share price and has done so as far as I know. While money market funds I had in my retirement account were earning very little during the low interest rate era that existed until recently. Let's talk about stable. You want to know what is stable value fund?
That's a great question, and it ties right into all the rest of this, because a stable value fund is supposed to be stable. How stable is it? Stay tuned.
Tom and Don are talking real money. Your guide to a really great financial future. Tom and Don. Sean are talking real money.
Because, well, real money is really, really important to you. And our phone number is, no, never mind. I'm not going to give you the phone number because it's not working right now. But if you do have questions, you can send them to us at TalkingRealMoney.com. You can do a lot of cool stuff at TalkingRealMoney.com. Let's go back and talk a little bit more about stable value funds, though, because that's a great question. Stable value funds are very, very similar to a money market fund in that their goal is to maintain a constant $1 per share value. And they do it supposedly, and this is their mandate, through very careful management. They buy high quality, lower duration fixed income investments, but they stretch a little bit more. The difference, a stable value fund can go a little longer in maturities because the expectation, it's not like a money market fund, which people use for immediate liquidity. A stable value fund, stable value funds tend to be in 401ks, 403bs, employer provided products. So the expectation is that a very large portion of the money will stay in the portfolio. There will not be a so-called run on the bank or run on the value fund, stable value fund. So they can be a little bit more aggressive, stretching for yield. And that's what you see when you look at a portfolio of a stable value fund versus a portfolio for a money market fund. You'll see longer duration securities. You'll see high quality, but not the highest quality. You're going to see corporates, for example, corporate bonds, which yield more than a government bond because, well, corporate bonds have more risk inherent in them. So that's a big part of the difference. Stable value funds have been fine, the vast majority of them. And if you're stable, again, we come back to the question of who's running it. I would have more faith in a Vanguard than I would in a smaller company managing my stable value fund because Vanguard has such a valuable brand to protect. Their brand is everything. And if you've got a great brand, you really don't allow anything to hurt it if you can help it. So they're going to do their very best to make sure that stable values and money markets don't break the buck. So there is it a safe investment? Yeah. It is a reasonably safe. Is it 100% safe? Absolutely not. 100% safety only comes in 100% safety and immediate liquidity. So you got to talk about when the money comes due. 100% safety and immediate liquidity can truly only be had with the shortest of short-term government. Actually, it can only be had by not doing anything. Literally keeping the dollar in your wallet. And even then, what that dollar will buy is declining as it sits in your wallet. So if you want absolute safety and absolute liquidity, you're just living in a dream world. You can't have it. You just can't have it. You cannot always get what you want. And I think I have one more question here that I'm going to sneak in. Let's see. Here it is. Yeah, I got it.
Hey, guys. It's Craig, formerly of Puyallup, now in the mountains outside Seattle. Tom and Taylor have all my contact information. But I had submitted a question online, but it kept on glitching and telling me I'm deliverable and that kind of thing. So I don't know if it ever came through. But got a question about diversification within asset classes. Now, a lot of my portfolio, a lot of my brokerage account, there's some overlap. So just as an example, and I have it across large value, small value, international, et cetera, but just as an example, if I determine that I want 25% of my brokerage to be small cap value, currently I have that spread between IJS and ABUV. Now, there's a respectively 26% overlap with IJS and 40% overlap with ABUV, which means I have much more diversification in small cap value. But am I hodgepodging it? Am I overcomplicating it? Should I just pick one? Or is it a good strategy as they're relatively similar in expense ratio to have multiple small cap value funds that are well performing, similar costs for increased diversification, similar with my dividend fund, similar with my large cap value, similar with my international small cap. Hey guys, it's Craig.
And he repeated. Okay. Craig, it's okay if it's for you. If you have the IJS is an ETF that's the S&P Small Cap 600. 600 small companies, not the smallest. AVUV has about 700 and some odd small companies. They get really small. The AVUV is the Avantis Small Cap Value Fund. You do get more diversification having the two funds, which is not a bad thing. It could be a good thing. But remember, the point of small cap value is to increase the risk in your portfolio for a portion of your portfolio. So to have two is going to maybe reduce your risk a little bit, but probably not give you as big a kicker on the upside. So it could be that you're working against the concept. But we're talking about tiny fractional amounts. Because remember, tiny fractions add up to like single percentage points if you have enough of them. Fractions of a percent eventually add up. But we're talking about so little that to make it more complicated for some people is way too counterproductive. It really gets in the way of just patiently, ploddingly investing because you're thinking about it too much. And Craig, I know you think about this too much. I really do. And by the way, by the quality of that call, and if you had problems with the other, you went way too far out in the mountains. Apparently, you exceeded the extent of good internet coverage out there. So you might want to find another internet service. But as far as this, I would not have both. I don't see a really abiding reason to do so. But on the other hand, having both, is it going to hurt you? No, actually, it might. Very, 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 very slightly reduce your volatility. But again, what are we buying small cap to do? Actually, we're buying small cap to increase the upside, to give us more risk in our portfolios. But while at the same time, we hope keeping the volatility relatively stable because you have asset classes that don't move in lockstep. Whereas two small cap funds, they're going to move in lockstep. They're going to move in. Two small cap value funds are going to move identically. So maybe you won't see as much of a decrease in volatility, a little because of the additional shares. And that really is the extent of it. But thank you so much for, of course, listening and calling in and adding your insights and ideas and questions. We appreciate it from all of you. And remember, you can call us usually on Saturdays at 855-935-TALK, 855-935-8255. Or you can send your questions in at talkingrealmoney.com, talkingrealmoney.com on the contact form.
Tom and Don are talking. For your real life and real future, Tom and Don are talking real money.
And if you need more help than we can provide in the confines of the show or the podcast with your calls or your sent in questions, we make our advisors, all of them, well, almost all of them, including Tom, available to you for free help. Now, we will not manage your money for free. That is really not a good business model. But we will help you. And we won't try to sell you anything. And we won't pressure you to do anything. And there's no obligation. And there's no cost. All you have to do is go to TalkingRealMoney.com and click on Meet an Advisor. TalkingRealMoney.com.
We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. Providing personalized financial planning or investing advice takes time, so please consult with a really good fee-only fiduciary investment, tax, or legal advisor. We know a good one. Investing must always involve risk. In other words, you can and probably will lose money at times. Also, as much as you want it, no one can accurately and consistently predict the future, so past performance doesn't tell you a darn thing about what the future will bring. Unlike many other programs that say something similar, Talking Real Money is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program
program is provided as a public service by Appella Capital, a fee-only registered investment advisor.
Thanks for listening, and please visit talkingrealmoney.com for more information and disclosures.
Are we done now?